For when we do roll call, do you normally want me to do it, or does staff prefer to do it?
You can do it. You can just have everyone popcorn or do it as you like.
Okay.
Hi, Na. Hi, Steven.
Hey, Kira. Hey, Na.
Hi.
Is that Chuck Adams I see in corner?
He just joined.
Then Kira, for sharing screen, should I share my screen or you'll pull up your screen since you have
Pull up
presentation?
my screen. Don't worry about it.
That's good.
But Steven, are you going to share for your portion actually?
Yeah, I think I can do that.
Okay, awesome. Perfect.
Mark Molnar.
Hello.
We're just waiting on two more people. And that'll get us to quorum. So we have Bill, Matt, TJ, any of those. Chuck.
Did folks RSVP?
No, not really. Do
They
they
usually not?
yeah, no, we get really low RSVPs. I always try to push it, but no.
It's interesting. So then you have us send an email. So then you have someone just having to review all the emails and checking us off.
So actually it's like an email that gets forwarded to me and whoever the program coordinator is, but right now it's just me. So I get those immediately whenever someone RSVPs, which is kind of funny because I usually get CC'd anyway.
Okay, it just seems like a lot of emails
Yeah.
for to
Well,
let you know
not
that
a
we're
lot of people
coming.
are RSVP, so it's
Oh,
actually
okay.
not.
Okay. Because every time I send the RSVP, I'm like, okay, but they'll just see me when it comes
Well,
in the
that's what
email.
usually ends up happening. So it's kind of hard
Okay.
sometimes to tell if people will attend or not, because a lot of times people will just come but not RSVP.
Yeah, so I'm going to have the information about the
I'll shoot folks a text in like 2 minutes if they don't show up. I guess I sent it out to Bill, TJ, and Matt. But I think in a couple minutes at 5 after, we can still start because we have at least three council members.
Okay.
I see Bill has joined.
Okay.
Hi.
Okay, I call the meeting to order at 3:05. We'll start with introductions. I'll go first. My name is Nali. I'm with Marin County, council member. And then whoever's ready to say hello.
I'm Chuck, council member.
Okay, I'll call on people. Bill?
Hi, Bill Bloom, HIV Health Services.
Thomas?
Thomas Noble, Chuck.
And then do you usually want me to call out the folks who are absent? No? Okay. Let's move on to Stephen.
Stephen Spano, he, him, or they, them, the HCAP staff attorney at the AIDS Legal Referral Panel.
Kira?
Kira, council staff.
Mark?
Mark Bulmer, council staff.
All right. Thanks for joining our council affairs meeting today. If we can take a look at the draft agenda, Kira, can you share screen? Usual business items plus two presentations, HCAP update and the needs assessment and COLA report. All right. How does it go? Does everyone approve this agenda? All right, we'll approve it by consensus. Next, we'll move on to the draft minutes from the last meeting.
I can go over these really quickly. We just had a Medi-Cal expansion presentation from Jason. Everyone remembers that. And then the National Behavior Health Study. Those were our big two presentations during that meeting.
Okay. Any edits to the draft minutes? All right, we'll approve the minutes by consensus. Okay, next is announcements. I can give a quick update just from Marin County. So as you know, at the last Planning Council meeting, we mentioned that our subcontractor suspended programs. And so we've taken over the services. Starting Monday, the program coordinator and case manager will be starting at Marin County. They were the staff from the SPAR Center. And so two of those folks are coming over. They're starting Monday. And the bilingual case manager who decided not to continue her role will be replaced by our staff. We have Adriana Costa, who will be serving the Spanish-speaking clients. And then we're identifying a couple other staff to be backup as well. And it's been quiet so far. And we've had some clients reach out to the phone number and email address that we shared. We sent the letter out to all of the SPAR clients that allowed us to in Aries. So you know how in Aries, the client can choose not to allow contact. And so it's possible that a few clients did not get that update. That's all we can do is we've updated our web pages, we've sent out the letter, and we've sent out an email for those that allow us to email. And so we've also asked the SPAR Center to update their website and there's a sign on their door. Unfortunately, they don't have any staff left. Their ED is no longer working there, who is supposed to be closing up the contracts. So they have their board president closing up the contracts for the agency and continuing the conversations for a possible merger. So we haven't heard back about the possible merger yet, but we're moving forward with our Ryan White services and we're able to continue most of everything. And with the exception that our other subcontractor, Marin Community Clinics, is supporting with ADAP applications because we are not an ADAP enrollment site. So that's the only piece we couldn't continue. But besides that, we're excited for the staff to join us next week and to continue services. For the most part, clients just want to know that they'll still have access to the services, especially the financial assistance programs, which we're operating in the same way. It's still the same eligibility requirements, and we were able to get a contract with another CBO to be able to cut the checks. And so there shouldn't be any delays with the financial assistance. So that's our update from Marin County. All right, any other announcements?
I put it in the chat, but I'll have to take off after I get some notes from y'all on my presentation.
Okay, great. So I guess any other public comment? All right, we can move on then. Okay, next is the HCAP update by Stephen. So take it away, Stephen.
Cool, thank you. So I will share. Let's see. I want to quick caveat this. So my contract year ended. Can you all see my screen? The presentation.
Yes. Yes.
All right. I'm going to keep it like this. The presentation is not complete. I think typically what happens during these presentations is I kind of give you all a quick preview of what's going on. I receive notes and then you know, incorporate them for the final presentation in the at the full council meeting. But more or less, the same kind of structure has stayed pretty true for the last few years. I will say, you know, the contract year ended in on March or February 29th this year, and so I've only had a couple of weeks to kind of get everything. I feel confident that I got correct data, but I have not had a chance to really distill that down and kind of come up with my impressions that will eventually be added into the report. But I do have some stories that I put together that I would like to check in. What I'll do, you know, typically what I start is, providing some goals. Today, there's an added goal, which will be to get some feedback from you all. I will also kind of skip through the part where I talk about HCAP, the HCAP program. I think most of you are very familiar with it at this point, and I'm happy to answer questions if that's it, but it doesn't seem like that's really the goal of the Affairs Committee at this point. So I'll kind of skip the HCAP presentation part of it and go right to the annual report at this point. And you know, this year was kind of interesting. There were some, like I said, I haven't really had a whole chance to kind of distill what all of this matters, but or what all of this means. But I can say, you know, pretty much on par with the last few years. We had 95 unduplicated clients and saw 118 HCAP matters. As you all know, many folks come to HCAP with more than one issue and oftentimes multiple times throughout the year. So although a client is only counted once, each one of their cases that is an HCAP issue is counted separately as a matter. I had 3 clients in San Mateo this year, 2 clients in Marin, and the remainder was in San Francisco. That's about 96% of our clients. I have some data with regard to demographics that is fairly similarly aligned with the other presentations that the committee and the council have seen. One thing I did think was interesting is, and if you'll recall, a couple of years ago, there was interest in kind of talking about the exact needs of people of different age groups. We tend to lump folks into an over 50 category, but the needs of a 60-year-old versus a 70-year-old versus a 63-year-old could be very different depending on when they have obtained retirement income, whether or not they're disabled, whether they've been employed previously or not. So I did think it was interesting that I have 16 clients now that are over 70. That's a significant portion. I mean, that's over 10% of the clientele that is now over 70 years old, which is remarkable. But it also does lead to some kind of unique issues. And I'll kind of talk a little bit about that, at least to the extent that I've been able to think about it or wrap my head around it so far. Gender-wise, I have 73 male-identifying clients, 12 female-identifying clients, 6 trans-identifying female clients, and 4 non-binary or other identifying clients. There's an increase in non-male identifying HIV clients this year. There was also a change to the demographics of the race and ethnicity of our clients. So we saw 46 clients identifying as white and 20 identifying as Black or African American, which is a significant increase from previous years. 16 identifying as Latina or Latinx, 3 API, and 22 other or unknown. Now, I know those numbers don't add up, but some people do identify with multiple races. Some people identify with as being Black or African American as well as Latino. So there is some overlap. Sexual orientation, 62 folks identified as gay or lesbian, 14 hetero, 7 bisexual, and 12 non-binary or other. Income has pretty much stayed the same. We typically have zero clients over 50, that are obtaining 50,000 have $50,000 of income per year. That's not unusual, especially because HCAP specifically deals with folks that are accessing the public services, which income is a requirement for a lot of those services. So 64 folks are extremely low income, making $15,000 or less, and everybody else is kind of in the middle. Service categories haven't changed too much, except for the one thing that I told you I would mention a little bit earlier, as far as how age might be impacting the service categories. There has been an increase in benefits counseling and legal services. So housing services has always been at the top, and it continues to be a major priority. It's interesting that same with primary care, those numbers haven't really changed too much. But as far as benefits counseling and legal matters coming up, it's hard to not assume that has something to do with the aging crowd, especially just anecdotally the clients that I've been seeing and the cases that I've been seeing. Referrals tend to be still the top issues that HCAP, or the top services that HCAP provides. But as I think I mentioned last year, I've combined kind of some of the other issues, because it's been very difficult to really parse out whether or not somebody is requiring advocacy or just needs some care coordination, needs support across the board. So oftentimes when I'm working with clients, it might only be counted as one matter, but I'm dealing with, three different service providers. I'm talking with a mental health professional, I'm talking with primary care services, I'm dealing with the housing provider. So oftentimes these issues kind of get molded into one another anyway. It didn't feel helpful, one. Two, it wasn't really possible given our new kind of database to capture all the information. In any instance, you'll see, quality of care is what was kind of the terminology that I've been using to kind of include not only advocacy and quality of care issues and complaints, but also just any of the issues that I'm dealing with where a client is reaching out, or even where a service provider is reaching out to me and asking, hey, this client really needs some support in this area, or do you have any advice for this client? And then connecting us together. The other thing that I thought was really interesting, again, I feel like I'm reading a lot of numbers at you, but I'll try to point out some of the important ones when I think it makes sense. One interesting thing is here, top outcomes, services rendered 98, cases pending 13, that's cases that I'll be, rolling over into this next year, but it's no services rendered is an interesting one, and that's an increase from previous years. When I indicate that a case is wrapped up with no services rendered, what it really indicates is that the client has either withdrawn from services or disengaged or decided not to move forward, but prior to there being a resolution. It is unique now to have so many of them. Typically, it's been like two or three. Now to have that more than doubled, as far as folks either disengaging or kind of getting fed up with the process or not able to keep up with the process, that is new. This is the kind of the part that still requires a little bit of work, and so I apologize but I still have to kind of get into the nitty gritty of the data. I will talk about some successes of the program. I think typically the repeat clients, that indicates that HCAP's ability to support on a long-term basis, even as their circumstances change. And I have seen some clients now that I've had with me for the last 5 years that have really utilized the continuum of care. moving from, you know, either using a primary care service provider that is more built for drop-in services and moving into like a specialty clinic. I've seen that several times now, but I consider those successes, and they wouldn't be possible if I didn't have these like longer term relationships with clients that would continue coming back to me. It also allows for the development of trusting relationship. I can connect them to other services as they need. And it also provides a space to voice their frustrations and fears, even when there is not necessarily a legal issue. And I'll talk a little bit about that later. I was able to hash that out in a separate slide. One thing that it is important, I think, for service providers to note, and I think it's also important for consumers to note, that it is very difficult for anybody to be a dispassionate self-advocate. So when we have clients with whose behaviors appear to be problematic, you know, I think it's very helpful to recognize that it's coming from a really righteous place for many instances. And nobody, when they are like looking for food or healthcare or housing, is going to be able to step aside and set those emotions aside, right? Those are core needs that people need met. And when threatened, we have some very natural responses to them. So it really does help to have an advocate level the playing field a little bit to help kind of communicate these things in a less passionate, less emotional way. And then I can also see creative alternatives utilizing the network of services that we have. I'll talk a little bit more about it later, but you know, we've kind of identified already within the system of care, the HIV system of care, there are some gaps, and you know, current funding issues don't really indicate that they're going to be filled anytime soon. And so, you know, we've had to kind of correlate with some other agencies, and other government partners like DOS to kind of see where some of these resources might be that our clients might be eligible for, even though they're not existing within the HIV health network and not funded by those. So I did want to highlight a couple of a success, and then and I may add to this as well as I kind of go through my data and go through each one individual case. I might choose to highlight more, but for now, there was one where a filing of grievance resulted in additional training for staff with regard to interpretation services for deaf clients during sensitive appointments. So this was a case where a client was going to an appointment. And it was a sensitive appointment. You know, there was bathing suit parts that were involved, and you know, the client is deaf and doesn't know, like, wanted to have somebody that he felt comfortable with talking to about these issues or signing with about these issues. And there has been kind of persistent problems with getting appropriate interpretation. For this client, the client would prefer to have somebody in person. And that's not across the board, but one of the things that I think was a really helpful thing for me was to hear from this client what the needs were and to hear about the deaf community. You know, there's a very small community of deaf people in San Francisco, an even smaller community of people who are deaf and HIV positive or even deaf and gay. And so, you know, oftentimes you'll have a lot of folks. One thing that was shared with me was, you know, a lot of the interpreters, they're not necessarily certified. Oftentimes they are CODA, right? Or children of deaf adults. And they kind of come up through the system. And so you could wind up in a situation where our client is talking with the child of one of their friends and in these like very sensitive appointments, talking about their like health issues with somebody that they know, and it's not comfortable. And so, you know, learning about this was a real opportunity for me to kind of wrap my head around some of the struggles, in a very humble way, to kind of learn about this disability that I don't experience, and have to share that and turn that around, you know, with a service provider. And we got a really good result doing that. And I thought that was worth sharing, because when advocates and clients work together, it really can amount to something. So in this instance, the grievance was escalated to organizational leadership. They provided additional training on interpretation services and the procedures, how they were offering interpretation services to their clients or to their patients. And then in addition, an effort's been mounted to seek an additional on-site vendor for interpretation and recognition of the decrease in available in-person interpreters. And so that there is like kind of a dearth of, there's a need for more interpreters, but the fact that the organization is now going out to try and seek other vendors, I think is a real success in this instance. And then of course, we are always burdened with some of the challenges. And I was able to kind of drill down a little bit. We're always dealing with some of the same things, you know, that the system deals with: mental health and substance use disorders. A large number of clients, almost all my clients, have coexisting mental health issues and substance use disorders. Behavioral issues often create barriers to services. And of course, you know, there's not a whole lot of places for folks to go when, you know, they are not able to use our public systems. You know, one of the things that I also kind of started realizing is that there's an added dimension here, not only from a public health system, but, you know, the justice system is no better. And so there's kind of this multi-layered feeling of helplessness for clients that I sense. You know, oftentimes a client will come to me with what is a righteous issue. They were injured. Something was taken from them, or, you know, the either the police took it something, or somebody took something off the street, or they were robbed, you know, in the community. And they're seeking justice, but there's no practical way to obtain it, right? So, you know, oftentimes if you're talking about somebody's like thing, you know, you're talking about a couple $100 or whatever it is, that's a small claims court issue. You can't have an attorney in small claims court anyway. We can come to you, you can come to us, we can tell you how to, you know, how to support yourself. There's access centers, there's resources we can provide, but you can't have an attorney represent you in small claims court. And if your overall health is not in a place where you can manage these things, going to small claims court is no small task. Moreover, a lot of clients, you know, even if they have been wronged by the system of care, there's not a whole lot that can be done because they haven't lost wages, right? They haven't been making money for a really long time. They're on Social Security or Medi-Cal, right? So they haven't had any out-of-pocket costs for their whatever health issues that they've had to address. Some of these things just don't make any sense to sue for because the law will look at it. The law can only do something if there's money involved. They can only say, well, you've been wronged and it cost you money and here's money. That's the only thing a court can do. So if you have not been, wronged in that way, then there's very little a court system can do. And then moreover, we have clients, you know, that are dealing with issues with other, you know, partners, neighbors, all these other things. Restraining orders is like a top need that people come in. AORP can't provide that. HCAP can't provide that. We would do nothing else but draft restraining orders. But, you know, the first thing I have to talk with the clients about is a restraining order is very, very useless if you're not willing to call the police every time it is violated. And engaging with the police system and the justice system is not the, you know, everybody's favorite thing to do. So when somebody comes to a lawyer and they want an attorney to support them and the only options are very unpalatable, there's kind of this added issue of like, wow, nobody's going to help me. I have no recourse. And that's a really sad place to sit. That's a really hard place to sit. So I did have one instance where a client did, you know, this vulnerable client fell out of care as a result of this. You know, basically they were experiencing paranoia around surveillance of their person and their belongings. They were experiencing that service providers were kind of agents of this surveillance, right? It's like feeling like the anytime they filled out a paper or anytime they engaged with a service provider, it was being used against them. And they came to HCAP because they wanted a lawyer to make everybody stop doing that. And of course, there's very little that I can do, right? One, you know, proof is very hard to come by in instances like that. But I do think it is important that we like recognize like these things are happening. You know, people's disabilities will certainly affect how they are experiencing these things. But at a baseline, I mean, we can talk about Prop E, which just passed. This is happening, right? Technology is oppressing us, like as a society. It's taking over a lot. There is surveillance happening, especially in public housing locations. And so I think acknowledging that, you know, is a really important part of that, because making it seem like somebody's experience is not real is not going to be very helpful to them. But nonetheless, there's no frontline organization that can provide these services, right? I can't mount any litigation against some unknown entity that is surveilling a person. I can't subpoena without having litigation, I can't subpoena a video recording from someone, right? The only time a lawyer can subpoena something is if there's a lawsuit. And so oftentimes this is another thing that kind of falls flat on its face. And the fact that there is really not a whole lot that can be done really kind of affects the client trust and the client's desire to continue to engage. So what I've tried to do is try to explain this to folks when they experience these things. You know, there are some organizations that will mount impact litigation. Not every case is impact litigation worthy, but there are organizations out there that are doing this work, that are working with folks. And so I've been trying to create relationship with these organizations that are out, kind of outside our system of care, but legal related organizations, oversight organizations that, you know, that I can refer to, that if people really do want to go a little bit further or learn a little bit more, they have some resource to go to. With that, right, I mean, the question becomes, how can we, as providers, help a client to move past the issues, to focus on self-care, and continue to engage with the continuum? And I have to fall back on my recommendation again from last year, which is additional intensive case management services. You know, I feel like these services that can really spend a lot of time with folks, learn their level of disability, gain trust, build trust, support them through their self-advocacy. Those are all really important ways that, you know, that that we might be able to help folks engage a little bit more. And so that will forever be an advocacy effort on my part. I am starting, as I said, to explore other options with other government partners to see where in the system of care this exists and how it can be accessed by folks who are eligible, even though it doesn't exist within the HIV Health Services Network. So that's more or less the presentation. I will always make myself available for questions, and I would love to hear what you guys thought so far.
TJ, go ahead.
Thank you. Hey, Stephen, thank you for your presentation. As always, it's really informative. I was just curious, when you said that you had an increase in non-services rendered because people disengaged somehow, is that just a general thing, or is it one particular, is it more in people over 70, or is there a way to figure that out without it being too much trouble?
No, you know, what it winds up being, and I can only speak about this anecdotally. I mean, I have a couple of examples in my head, but like I said, when I notate that somebody, that there is no service rendered, what it means is that the client has disengaged or from that, or kind of withdrawn their efforts without some sort of resolution. So oftentimes what will happen is I will contact, you know, I'll reach out with a client to a client. We'll have some sort of discussion about what our next course of action is. I'll ask them to come in and sign some paperwork so that I can begin working, and then I won't hear from them again. Or they'll come in, they'll sign, we'll have another conversation, and then they will second guess it and say, well, you know what, I don't really think this is worth it. I don't think anything's really going to come from it. I mean, really, is somebody going to get fired? I'm like, it's unlikely that somebody's going to get fired from this. And that's not really my goal. I want everybody to improve, you know? And when they hear that, it's kind of like, well, you know what? I think I don't even want to deal with this, you know? So, and that has happened on several different occasions. It's not because I mean, anecdotally though, that's all I can offer with regard to that. It's just, it could have to do with follow through, but you know, those are things that, you know, I'm finding out would qualify a person for intensive case management services, right? If they can't continue to engage with other services because they don't have the additional support, ECM services, ICM services are available, and they're appropriate. It's just very difficult to connect folks to that. Does that answer your question, okay, TJ?
It does. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Mark?
I have three questions, all on sort of different topics. The first one is, I like how you mentioned that you, not really called out, that you noted the number of folks who are seniors who are accessing services and how you linked that, verbally at least, to potential challenges around benefits. I guess I'm a little perplexed, though, about how you, like, what have you seen trends as far as, like, what the challenges are that they have experienced? Because clearly there's a lot of fear and a lot of, like, confusion around benefits, but why would they come to HCAP about benefits rather than a benefits provider?
Got it. So there is this will be a tricky one for me to talk about, but so there's only a couple of providers that provide legal services or benefits counseling. There is some overlap in the practice areas there. And my colleagues that practice in that area are, you know, available to me, and we share resources often. So oftentimes what will happen is the clients will come to me with some other issue. And it will become immediately evident that understanding their benefits, you know, I'll ask them, what's their insurance? You know, oh, so what's your insurance? And the answer will be, well, I don't know. And I say, okay, well, you know, do you have your insurance card? And like, I have it somewhere. Okay, well, what's, you know, it requires a little bit more digging. So that's kind of, that answers a little bit about how folks are showing up. Oftentimes it's coming to me from, I'm getting referred to either from somebody else at AORP who's working with a client and notices this issue, or the client doesn't know where to go and they think that I'm the person. And then oftentimes I will say, you know, there is an organization that receives benefits counseling. Let me link you to them. And so I've, you know, there have been an increased number of referrals to that service category, which I mentioned. As far as a trend with regard to the actual benefits or the suite of benefits, it's so sticky. It is so confusing to me, and I am not the expert, but I do have colleagues at the other agency that are very good at it. So oftentimes when a client comes to me and they say that they have Medi-Cal and Medicare, and they're still like getting bombarded with all of these copays, and they can't afford to even like go to the doctor or their medication, or they get some medication cost that they never got before. It's normally because they linked to some kind of advantage plan, or they linked to, or something got unhinged somewhere in the process. And uncovering that requires somebody going into their kind of benefits, their suite of benefits, understanding exactly where they're coming from, knowing more about their insurance. And I just simply don't have the capacity to be able to dig into it in that way. So the answer could be very simple. Maybe it's just I don't know. And that might be true. There, the other truth is that it can be complicated when folks switch over into retirement income, whether or not they've been making money or not, whether they qualified for retirement income or not. Sometimes it's just SSI and SSDI. Those things have very complicated changes and asset requirements. So it's helpful for me to refer them to another organization that can help them dissect that and understand it a little bit more. Does that answer that question?
Kind of. So, you know, when I see benefits on a slide like that, knowing what HCAP does, which is often dealing with grievances and mediating between service providers and consumers, I'm seeing a service category. My impression is of a service category that is having multiple attempts at mediation and grievances. Well, from what you describe, it sounds more like benefits is a source of frustration and confusion and challenge for clients. And possibly what's happening there is an info and referral, or at least your recognition of this is impacting their life. So do you see what I mean? Like when I see that, so so in some ways boldly highlighted, it gives me an impression that there is something, that there are some challenges implicit within the service, not implicit, explicit within the service category that require perhaps some looking at. Similar to when we've seen, like, say, food called out or dental services called out. It seems like benefits are not being called out in that same way. So I just suggest that you make that kind of a clarification. Everything's a work in progress, including benefits, as far as like non-medical case management goes, or whatever the case may be where it's actually held. But I want that to be clear to council members that the challenge is on the consumer side, not necessarily consumers saying, I'm going to file these grievances because my benefits officer or the case manager who's working on my benefits is being problematic to me. You see that?
I absolutely understand. So I think maybe it will be more helpful if I make sure to indicate that the high number is not necessarily due to a high number of grievances. It is a higher number of referrals to benefits counseling. The need is higher, not necessarily the satisfaction level has changed. Yeah.
Great. Okay. Wow. Question number two. I noticed there you had you noted restraining orders. Now that also was surprising to me. Is that, I guess maybe I just need some clarification. Is that consumers, are you being a part of actions or conversations where consumers are attempting to have restraining orders against service providers? Like that was like
not this time around. No. And in fact, the only instance that I can think of is actually opposite, where there was a restraining order.
Yeah, that's usually typically what happened.
Yeah. So, but you know, that still has to be defended. What I can say is the way HCAP supports in that way, right? And the client has a restraining order against them and cannot go to a specific place. Where the services are offered. My goal then becomes trying to find a way that the services can continue without the client going.
To me, that seems typical of what you've actually, this position has done for as long as I've been aware of this program, is trying to sort of some way ameliorate the effects of a restraining order, or even just like you're no longer our client, whatever that might. So I'm wondering then if you can just sort of, like, again, like when I see that on a slide, my impression is, okay, wow, the advocate is actually like helping or trying to support restraining orders being put together by clients. And this is a particular trend. This is happening enough that I'm actually seeing it on a slide. I mean? Like, that's such a big thing.
Got you. So I can certainly clarify that. And, you know, I was drafting it, those were the issues that I was talking about. Where I was coming from with that was the kind of the overall feeling of injustice or kind of helplessness or kind of oppression that folks come to HCAP with, right? When they come and if they're feeling, you know, they've got to, you know, like they weren't getting what they needed from the service provider. And so that, that informed their behaviors. And then on top of it, rather than just try to solve the problem, they got a restraining order against them. They can't even go back there, you know? And so there's like this kind of added dimension from that perspective where, you know, of like injustice and kind of helplessness. And like, so that's kind of what I was getting at, but I can understand.
It fell under this area when you were also talking about like, they might be able to do small claims court or not. So it seemed like from the way it was structured on that slide, like this is one of the recourses that they were doing and that you were seeing a lot of. I mean, if it's on a slide, I'm assuming it's happening more than once.
I will flesh that out and make it more clear exactly what my point around that is. Yeah.
Great. Okay. Third and last question is around later in your presentation, you note folks who are coming with feelings about being surveilled, which, you know, I do appreciate that you have, I'm not sure I want to say validated necessarily, because it's hard to validate something that might specifically come from a particular mental health or a complex issue, for sure. But I do appreciate that you have not just literally said you're crazy or something like that, right? Like it's good to understand that we do actually live in a society that surveils in different ways, for sure. But at the same time, surveillance is the fear of surveillance and overwhelming conspiracies is a fairly common, I hesitate to even say normal, symptom or how mental health challenges show up. So have you had any challenges yourself, or do you not even try to do any kind of connectivity with mental health? Is that like, that's clearly like, if someone is feeling there's a gigantic conspiracy against them, which I've come across clients who definitely feel that way, and they might have small points around like, I mean, I'm all over Aries, or my housing has surveillance, literal surveillance cameras. So there's parts that obviously have truth in them, but it's also like I fully believe in harm reduction, but I don't believe in like harm enabling or harm normalization. And so I think for me, part of harm reduction is hearing someone out, creating that safe space, but also when able to like connect them with a resource that could actually reduce the harm that they might be experiencing, because no one wants to live in a paranoid like state of mind. Are you able to do that, or do you find that you're unable to do that because you don't want to in some ways lose a safe space that you've created?
No. I mean, I think that enhances the safe space when they know that they can share what's going on. When folks know that what they're sharing, you know, one is confidential between attorney and client, right? It's attorney client privilege, just by virtue of me being at AORP. And I make sure that folks know that. So, you know, and if they don't believe that, there's not a whole lot I can do. And you know, that is a relatively common angle that I take, which is, you know, this is how society is right now. And believe me, I know it's not comfortable. You know, I have my own concerns with it. But it's not changing. It's not going away. It's only going to get worse. And I can share that with the client and tell them, you know, it's only going to get more surveilled. We're not going backwards in this. And so I feel like maybe it's really important for us all to learn some tools on how to live in this world, you know, with this new dynamic, and how to protect yourself. And there's some really great resources online. And I would suggest it's probably important to have somebody you can talk to about this on a regular basis. And, okay, you know, have you been to, you know, such and such service provider? Do you have a therapist right now? You know,
okay,
and that is a common referral. The problem that we run into right now, right, is the availability of those services is limited, and or the client has already utilized those and has already kind of incorporated that into the conspiracy, you know. So there's not a whole lot of alternative service providers to turn to when the client has already kind of lost trust, you know. But yes, I mean, that's exactly how I handle it, is a referral, because it's not something that's going to be solved through a legal channel.
Particularly if their mental health challenges are a big part of what's at the base of the intensity of their reaction, sort of, and the widespread. Okay, well, thank you. I appreciate that you're doing that. I kind of assumed you did, but I didn't hear that, so I wanted to double check.
Okay, well, yeah. And it wouldn't be indicated. You know, that's the other thing about some of this data. It wouldn't be indicated because there's not like a jump in mental health service referrals, right?
Exactly.
That doesn't show on my report, and that data is not there because I haven't been able to do that, really. That actually is not true. I can go back, and I have a great example that I can use to kind of illustrate how HCAP supports in that way. So thank you for that note, because I think I can flesh that out a lot more.
All right, thank you.
I have two questions. Sure. I'm curious how many clients are new from one fiscal year to another. Like, is it the same 90 folks coming to you year after year, or is it a lot of new folks?
There's a significant overlap, but no, I see new folks every year. I see new diagnoses every year. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think evident this year, you know, just in the numbers of folks identifying as Black, African American, as well as folks identifying as trans, like those are all different folks for me. They're new clientele.
Yep. Good to know. I have another question. So in Marin County, right, if a client is having a challenge with a service provider, we tell the client to go through the grievance procedure that the agency has set forth. And then sometimes the client is hostile or there's threats, right? So then we'll say, okay, we tell the service provider, do a behavior contract with the client, and saying that they must, you know, behave appropriately in order to receive services. And then after that, like, we've never had an after that, right? Like, after that, it's like, okay, work with Steven and see what you can do. But, like, in SF, have you ever, like, declined Ryan White services to a client? Like, we've never had to, because we've always had, like, staff at the agency that have always been able to work with clients. But now, as we move to possibly a new subcontractor, they might not be as lenient or patient with clients. Like, if there's threats, then they may say, you know, we decline to provide services. So, yeah, so at what point does San Francisco usually, like, cut off a client if they continue to threaten the staff?
I think it's important, the language, right? So, being verbally abusive, being, right, those things, that's not violent, right? Nobody was hurt, nobody's injured, right? And I'm not saying that we as service providers show up to be verbally abused, right? But I have found that the service providers that I work with, at least, have a fairly high threshold for pain when it comes to that. I have not spoken with a service provider ever that has said that person doesn't deserve to come here. You know, I've never heard that out of anyone's mouth. And I'm really happy to hear that. You know, there have been times when I've had to go to the mat with folks about, you know, service delivery and making sure that there's got to be some way to provide services. But you know, after doing that a couple of times, I feel like folks, a lot of service providers in particular, have seen how successful it can be to just create healthy boundaries about it, and, you know, teach their staff how to do that, and then they're able to kind of do it on their own. You know, the same is true for clients, by the way, right? When I have a client come to me, you know, their behavior, you know, if they're animated, their passion, their behaviors are kind of coming out in this attempt to kind of self-advocate, having me there to kind of reframe the language, restate what it is they're saying, teach them, it's language they didn't have. And so the next time I find them more capable of being a self-advocate more appropriately, right? And then we might find them engaging more appropriately over time. And I have seen that. You know, it's a process. Every case is different. I won't get into too many specifics about, you know, an individual client or any individual behaviors, but I have not seen an instance where a client was entirely denied services as a result of, you know, being like just verbally abusive, right? There's always something more. There's some, you know, if there's a termination involved, a termination of services, and in that instance, linking them to alternative service providers has always been an option in San Francisco. That may not be the case in Marin. And so, you know, always with an instance like that, what I would suggest is to have them contact me. I'm always happy to be available before the behavioral contract comes in so that I can be a part of that process with the client, so that it doesn't just sound like they're getting grounded, because that doesn't feel good as an adult either. And that often kind of escalates a situation when somebody says, well, you're just going to have to behave better. I mean, that's not people, that doesn't land great with adults, you know? And so I've found the sooner I get involved, the better. But I can't speak from a citywide. I can just say I'm actually really proud of our system of care and the gumption that all the service providers show, despite us all being very, very tired.
Thanks, Steven. All right, any other questions for Steven before we move on? All right. Thanks, Steven.
I always appreciate this opportunity. Thank you for the feedback. I will incorporate it all, and I'll see you guys in a couple of weeks. Thank you so much.
And Manuel has joined us. Hi.
Hey, everyone. Sorry, I just had a presentation with our ED, but I'm here.
All right. And then we can move on to the next presentation, Needs Assessment and COLA Report. With Kira.
Awesome. And then Mark, just to verify, this meeting ends at 4, correct? Or is it 4:30?
I think it's 4:30. The agenda
4:30?
Says adjourn. Well, the agenda says adjourn at 4:15.
Okay.
Our calendar invitation has it for 2 hours though, so I don't know if that's just never been updated. But I like
the calendar invite is standing for sure. I think hopefully folks are flexible enough to move beyond 4:15 if we go over. I think we will. I mean, folks should have this in the calendar for a particular amount of time, and sometimes the agenda, not sometimes, the agenda will often change based on sort of what I imagine will be the amount of time needed, but we should definitely see this meeting as potentially around an hour and a half.
Okay, just want to make sure how fast I should go. All right. All right, and can everyone see that? I can't see anyone.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, awesome. So I'm just going to go quickly through the presentation, which this is just a report back of the needs assessment that we conducted last year. And our focus group was Latino, Latina, Latinx. And then towards the end, I will also have a COLA report back. And that focus group was people affected by eviction. That one's a little bit smaller. That's why it's attached with this one. All right. And so this is just some background information, including how many participants we had, where those surveys took place, and then kind of what time. So we have August through November that they took place, and then, of course, the incentive that folks received. And this is just a table of content. These next couple of slides are data slides that we pulled from those surveys. And so I picked kind of key data slides just so that folks could see. These are just slides that usually folks likes to see. So the age of our participants, how long they've been living with HIV, if they're engaged in medical care. And then this was actually a new question that we received as feedback from our last needs assessment presentation. And so this was just asking folks if they answered the last question or the previous question with no, why they weren't engaged in medical care. And so we gave them a few options. Then we conducted the service category ranking. And so these are the results of that. And we had a discussion regarding these service categories. And so there's some quotes on the right side. And then some really good things were said about a lot of the categories that we discussed, as well as some concerns or issues here at the bottom. Then we also discussed dental care, food, and some additional quotes on the right side. And then these were our findings. So these were just, this is the second part of that discussion where we asked the groups and participants questions regarding barriers to their access of care and how often they engage with the care and just their overall quality of life. And so I highlighted some themes in the bold. And then these were some quotes from that discussion. So you can see that. And in conclusion, just some takeaways regarding benefits, dental care, and primary medical care, which were very much talked about. And then this slide is just recommendations, which actually we have four recommendations this year. And so the first one is creating a Spanish language informational pamphlet that includes benefit support. For example, how to apply for benefits, which benefit options are available, and so on. The second one being HHS will continue to implement service provider trainings that focus on the needs of the Latino, Latina, Latinx populations. The third recommendation, HHS to disseminate HCAP monthly reports, HCAP annual reports, needs assessment presentation, and COLA presentations to the appropriate service providers so that they can review them if they'd like and kind of see the feedback and issues that are sometimes arising. And the last recommendation being to schedule a presentation or training for the HCPC regarding the collective impact approach to Latino populations. And then this section is the COLA section. So before I move on to this one, does anyone want me to go back to a certain slide or have any feedback about that particular section?
I think you might have to lean on Thomas a little bit for that fourth recommendation, since that I think that came from Thomas. So if Thomas is willing to explain more fully what they meant around that, that would be great. I mean, it might not get any questions, but if it does, you might want to just hand the mic over to Thomas to explain what a presentation on the collective impact approach might look like.
Oh, yes. Do I need to do that now, or should I just... No. Okay.
Just be prepared if questions come about, well, what would that recommendation look like?
Right. Because we are actually working with IFR around a collective impact approach. So it's recommendations kind of moved into a space of making something happen already. So
we love an in-process recommendation.
Oh, what a nice way to say that, Mark. Okay. Continue.
All right. I'll go ahead and move on then. So these were just a report back for results for the people affected by eviction COLA. And so this is just some background information. So some thank you and COLA limitations. We did have a small sample size of 5 participants. So we do want to say that they may not be representative of the demographics of this target population, but we did think it was important for folks to hear this feedback that we received regardless. And so a big topic of discussion, of course, was housing. And so we had a lot of discussion going on around that. And so I included that here, as well as some quotes that I took from that discussion in the bottom. And then another topic of discussion was also benefits. And so I included some concerns at the top, and then towards the bottom, some quotes about that. And then in conclusion, I wanted to point out some concerns that folks had regarding benefits, as well as the anxiety that folks often feel with asking for help. Sometimes we heard back that a lot of folks kind of didn't know when to differentiate what was an emergency, as they felt like they were constantly living in kind of an emergency. So having to figure that out, and then also the feeling of asking for help too often, as well as the quality of living conditions and location of housing causing fear around someone's general safety. And that was that. So any questions around that section or any feedback? Stop sharing.
I realized I was shaking my head. You probably couldn't see, so no questions, but well done.
Thank you.
Oh, right. You might be leaving at 4:15 or before, after all.
I'm sorry, could you go back to the recommendation at the very thing about HHS disseminating the HCAP report? Did I see that correctly?
Yes.
Third
one.
And I'm saying this recommendation is coming from whom?
This came actually from a conversation that we had at community engagement. HHS was there. I think it was Maria. The idea that there is interesting and, perhaps important information about particular service categories that service providers should know. In particular, since our meetings are all public meetings and all documents shared are basically publics, particularly since HCAP no longer named service categories. The thinking behind that recommendation was that these pieces of information could be helpful to the agencies that are literally being discussed, whether it's within COLAs, needs assessments, or HCAPs. So why not pass on that information to them rather than them literally not knowing about it? I know that myself as a former program director of direct services, I would like to know if there are recommendations that are in recommendations and also trends or trends analysis coming out of COLAs and needs assessments that pertain to the services that my programs provided. Also would like to know if there are reports that are specifically noting trends or even just overall, yeah, trends, challenge trends from HCAP reports, and in particular, the HCAP annual report. So yeah, that's where that came from, that discussion and community engagement.
Okay.
Bill, do you have concerns about that?
Only about the first one, but it's not so much a concern as wanting more information as to whom and what the goal would be. And do the providers really, like, is that a helpful thing, or is it just going to be like a kind of an eyeball roll in another email? Because we try and be, all of them make sense except for that one, but it's not that it doesn't make more sense. I'm just more wanting to be clear about what the goal is and who it would be sent to. I think it makes sense to share it with the provider. They got it. I'm just kind of wondering the whole network, you know, because we have.
Oh, no, not the whole networks. Certainly seems like an easy way to get a whole network eye rolling for sure. So the recommendation is specific to disseminating with impacted service providers. So of course,
yeah, know which agency it is so that we would send it specifically to that.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly. So like, say there were recommendations in a needs assessment that's specific around dental care. I know that if I was a dental provider, I'd want to know what those recommendations were, particularly if there's a potential for movement on any of them via carry funds. If I was a provider and I saw that HCAP annual report in a public meeting said there's a trend here with food and restraining orders, I would want to know that. And I think that might help me understand like how our services are being received in the community. Make sense?
Okay. So it would be not in
all provider emails.
It's more just I want that if I send too many things, people will stop reading them. Or even looking at them. So maybe just that recommendation could be a little like targeted or something, add a little word in there just so it's clear we're not sending everything to everybody. Okay.
Yeah, I can make that change.
Thank you.
Yeah, please don't send everything to everybody because that's just
an instant
delete from a lot of folks.
we want people to read. It's like that sweet spot so that it's meaningful and helpful as opposed to a lot of stuff they don't want to see. So, but yes, the targeted stuff, I don't see a problem with that.
Is the assumption that Bill's going to carry forward all of the recommendations that's in the slide?
Yes, we personally want Bill to make sure to enact
each and every recommendation. Like,
who's in charge of? No, I'm a staff person or two. We'll disseminate it a little bit further, and maybe we'll ask our admin. But I won't just like kind of bootjack people with it. I'll let them know. I'll probably do a larger announcement that this is a request of the Planning Council, and the purposes are situational awareness and improvement opportunities. Blah blah blah, and then I'll have a staff person probably send them out.
Like, yeah, and it also depends on the recommendation, how the recommendation looks. So I think first keep in mind is that they are literally recommendations. These are not mandates coming from the council. They're recommendations that HHS can choose or not choose to follow. Some recommendations are more targeted, like say, can CHEP we recommend that CHEP do this presentation. We recommend that HHS distribute these reports. Others are more like, it would be great if this happened, like a pamphlet. And so HHS could say, okay, you know what? That's already in process. Or they could say, hey, we have some leftover carry forward funds, and this seems like a good project to spend it on. It really is coming from that basic definition of a recommendation. It's not definitely like, we now mandate that HHS needs to do all of this and report back.
Thanks.
I mean, the council can obviously issue directives, but that's not what these are.
All right. No other questions?
Sorry, just within what Bill just said, can you add at the bottom of that, just like for the recommendation, like for quality or for help with quality assurance or something like that?
However, Bill. Improvement opportunities, they can use that word. Sorry, guys. Buzzwords have been a lot of meetings all day. I'm full of them now. And just add the word targeted, and we'll figure out. And if we have questions about that, yeah, I think we can figure out the sweet spot on that.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right. No other questions? Can I adjourn the meeting?
Actually, no. Are we gonna note Manuel's new hair?
Actually, it's just
not new hair.
Oh, you faked me out.
I did the same thing a few meetings ago.
I wore it down and did a swoop over for my presentation. And then in a hurry, I just hurry up and put it up with a ponytail. Just for y'all. Now, I know it looks like I got a haircut, but no.
Business up front, party in the back. All right. Thank you.
Of course. Thanks, everyone. Thank you so much, Nong.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
Meeting adjourned at 4:05.
Well done. Bye.
Bye, everyone.